Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Names in the news. Graduate. Hannah E. Bynum of Odessa has been named the valedictorian of the Orion High School class of 2019-20. Hannah is graduating with a 5.07 grade point average and will be attending the University of Texas Permian Basin in the fall. Hannah was a National Merit semifinalist this past year. She took 4 AP examinations this year and completed a practicum in healthcare. She is the daughter of Corey and Sharon Bynum of Odessa. OPD reports no suspects in Odessa shooting. Two 22-year-old men were reportedly shot Wednesday night in Odessa near Ratliff Stadium, an OPD department report detailed. The arrest report detailed that an officer was dispatched at around 8:03 p.m. to Medical Center Hospital in reference to a gunshot victim. At MCH, the officer met Nathaniel Aguilar. Although the officer originally starts the report with the spelling as Aguilar, the name is written as Aguilar later in the report. Aguilar said he was with his friend Raymond Rodriguez Wednesday night in a gray 2017 Ram 1500, stopped at a red light at Grandview Avenue near Ratliff Stadium. After the light turned green, a red Chevrolet Silverado reportedly pulled up parallel to them and fired multiple rounds through Rodriguez's driver's side window. Rodriguez reportedly pulled the truck off into a field after being hit with a round, where Aguilar asked Rodriguez to get into the passenger seat so he could drive them to the hospital. Aguilar reportedly said that Rodriguez was complaining about being shot in the eye and that he was bleeding from his stomach and face. Aguilar reportedly had a small laceration on his right forearm caused by a round and some minor cuts. Rodriguez reportedly had a bullet wound under his left eye that went through the cheekbone into the right eye. The doctor said that the right pupil was unresponsive and Rodriguez would not be able to see out of it again, the report detailed. Rodriguez also reportedly had multiple facial fractures and metal fragments around his left eye. The report detailed that Aguilar did not get a good look at the truck or person doing the shooting. An OPD press release detailed that while one of the victims was released from MCH, the other was transferred to a hospital in El Paso. OPD detailed that no arrests have been made and there are no suspects. Anyone with information about the incident should contact OPD at 432-335-3333 or Odessa Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 20-0010726.
Odessa American Opinion Page, Friday, June 19th. Texas View. AG should add to, not replace, review of police. The point, jurisdiction should not be removed from local investigators. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton wants to take control of all incidents involving the use of lethal force by police officers throughout the state. Automatic state review is advisable, but it should augment and not replace local investigations in the officer's own jurisdictions. Paxton wrote an opinion piece that was published in the Austin American-Statesman June 11th. In it, he asked the legislature to give his office the authority to investigate deaths in police custody and other police misconduct allegations. The legislative session begins in January, and lawmakers start pre-filing bills November 9th. In his column, Paxton noted that local district attorneys work closely with police departments to prosecute crime. Currently, when someone dies during an interaction with police, the officer's agency investigates and files a report with the Attorney General's office. But under current law, that's where my authority ends, Paxton wrote. My office is not empowered to investigate these deaths, nor has it been given the jurisdiction to prosecute such cases. Given that fact, it's not reasonable to expect local prosecutors to easily turn the gate and even prosecute those with whom they work on a regular basis. Apparent conflicts of interest in these horrific cases will only serve to further erode public confidence in our law enforcement institutions. Actually, local officials can ask for an in-depth review from the Attorney General's office, although they routinely make such requests of the Texas Rangers, an arm of the Department of Public Safety that is independent and presents the results of its work to the agency that requested it. This is not the first time Paxton has sought control over cases of police force. A bill was presented to the legislature in 2015, but it would have disqualified local prosecutors from any jurisdiction over such cases. The bill was not presented to lawmakers for review. More involvement from the Attorney General could be valuable, but it should add to and not replace review by other agencies, especially the local departments that have immediate supervision over the officers in question. It is possible, after all, for an officer to be exonerated by the state, but still face sanction for violating local procedures. State review should not isolate or insulate officers from internal investigations by their own agencies. Local supervision also ensures that final authority can remain in the hands of the people who deal directly with the officers and who live under the laws and ordinances that the officers enforce. The people can force local commissions to demand accountability of their police forces by demanding accountability of those commissions. In the unfortunate event of a death involving police, voters can demand reforms and vote officials out if they don't respond. That pressure can help ensure that incidents will be investigated properly. The ultimate assurance that alleged misconduct will be reviewed and corrected is local control by an active electorate. In a true democracy, no hand is stronger than the one that feeds the ballot box. Opinion column by the Brownsville Herald. Odessa American Opinion Page. Juneteenth and the Ongoing Fight for Equality by U.S. Senator John Cornyn. Each Juneteenth, Texans celebrate the anniversary of the end of slavery in our state and our nation's continued progress towards equality. This year, our nation is grappling with how far we still have to go. As a history buff, I stand by the old adage, those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Studying where we've been helps me better understand where we should go. And sometimes, like now, it shines a light on long-term challenges we've not yet overcome. As our nation looks at modern racial injustice, we're confronted with our deeply flawed past. America was founded on ideals of freedom, opportunity, and equality, ideals that we know our slaveholding founding fathers practiced selectively in their own lives. As I seek solutions, I am also celebrating a step we've taken this year toward memorializing African American history. A few months ago, a bill I co-authored with Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee from Houston to begin the process of establishing an Emancipation National Historic Trail was signed into law. The Emancipation Trail follows the path hundreds of freed slaves took from Galveston to Houston to spread the great news U.S. Major General Gordon Granger announced on June 19, 1865, that all slaves were freed. General Order No. 3 made it clear. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves. Our bill, now law, outlines a 51-mile route from Galveston to Houston, stopping at some of the most significant historic sites along the way. The beginning of the trail in Galveston will be marked by the site of the former Osterman Building, local headquarters of the Union Army during the Civil War, and where General Granger famously read General Order No. 3. The building itself has been demolished, but you can find a historical marker in its place. There's also the Reedy Chapel in Galveston, Texas's first African Methodist Episcopal Church, and one of many century-old African-American churches on the island. Reedy Chapel was established in 1848 when then-slaves began gathering outdoors for services, and more than 172 years later, the congregation still gathers for an annual Juneteenth celebration and for services each Sunday. My wife and I had the privilege of visiting Reedy Chapel earlier this year to meet its pastor and some of its members. In Houston, the Emancipation Trail stops near Freedmanstown, an urban colony established in the 1860s for freed slaves and known for its iconic brick roads, hand-laid by the new residents. Today, the historic Freedmanstown lies within Houston's 4th Ward and is home to the African American Library at the Gregory School and the Rutherford B.H. Yeats Museum dedicated to the neighborhood's history. Emancipation Park in Houston is a final stop on the trail, bought and named by a group of African Americans in 1872 for a spot to commemorate Juneteenth. Led by Reverend Jack Yeats, a Baptist minister and former slave, the group pooled their $1,000 to purchase 10 acres of open land for the celebration. Nearly 150 years later, the beautifully renovated Emancipation Park still serves the people of Houston, now with a pool, baseball fields, and tennis courts. I visited Emancipation Park earlier this year with Representative Jackson Lee, Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner, and other community leaders for a walking tour and to discuss the importance of establishing the Emancipation Trail, which would become only the second national trail commemorating African American history. 155 years later, we're still on the road toward the absolute equality ordered by General Order No. 3. But by studying and celebrating the positive steps our nation has taken through celebrating Juneteenth or establishing the National Emancipation Trail, we can better understand how to move forward. Opinion column by U.S. Senator John Cornyn.
Obituaries for Friday, June 19th. Mary Ruth Weddell. Mary Ruth Weddell passed away in Odessa Tuesday, June 16th, at the age of 89. She is survived by her son, Jerry Weddell, her sister, Francine Wright, 4 grandchildren, and 5 great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her husband, Will Weddell, her daughter, Judy DeRiso, brother Earl Manning, and sisters Lorraine Dobbs and Ruby Cheek. Ruth was born December 21, 1930 in Bellevue to Lily and Homer Manning. She married Will Weddell in 1947. A funeral is scheduled for June 19th at First United Pentecostal Church with Pastor Terry Hugh officiating. Patricia Ott Kelly. Patricia Ott Kelly passed away June 13th. She was preceded in death by her husband, Daniel J. Kelly Sr., her parents, Kenneth and Dorothy Ott, brothers Mike and John Ott, and sister Sally Carroll. She is survived by her children, Kimberly and Terry McCrory of Odessa, Daniel Joseph Kelly of Lubbock, children of her heart, Misty Lee and Casey Ott, 10 grandchildren, 11 great-grandchildren, and deeply loved family members. A celebration of life was held Thursday, June 18th, at Acres West Funeral Home. Interment will be held at 9 a.m. at Rest Haven in Midland, Friday, June 19th. Death notice. Ruth Hyatt. Ruth Hyatt, 88, of Andrews, died Tuesday, June 16th. A celebration of life will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, June 19th, at Means Memorial Methodist Church, with Pastor Les Hall officiating. Arrangements are by McNett Funeral Home of Andrews.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, June 15th, 2020. This article is entitled, New Mexico May Extend Relief for Shut-In Oil Wells. Penalties may be waived for up to a year. By Adrian Hedden from the Carlsbad Current Argus. The New Mexico State Land Office sought to extend its emergency rulemaking first enacted in April to allow oil and gas wells to be shut in temporarily without facing penalties as the industry continued to grapple with steep drops in the price per barrel driven by COVID-19 pandemic and global market tensions. During a Friday public hearing, the Land Office announced the rulemaking could be extended for an additional year. It was initially scheduled to last up to 30 days and allowed for an extension of up to 120 days. But the market was expected to continue to struggle to recover, even as some states began lifting travel restrictions and stay-at-home orders, which could cause fuel demand to grow. In April, the price of West Texas Intermediate was reported to have dropped to an historic low at about minus $40 per barrel. The first time in history WTI fell below $0 per barrel. Jordan Kessler, Assistant Commissioner of Mineral Resources at the Land Office, said the lower price environment for oil would lead to less revenue to the office, which it distributes to its beneficiaries, mostly public schools and institutions. Owners of shut-in wells are still liable for any excessive emissions or pollution created by that well, Kessler said. And such regulations can be enforced by the state, whether on federal or state land. She pointed to the Land Office's revenue from royalties paid by operators from October 2019 to May, which hovered at about $100 million each month, based on production from 3 months prior. In June, the Land Office projected it would get less than half of that, down to $47 million in June and $26 million in July. Because of the low price of WTI, we do expect to receive significantly less revenue for our beneficiaries, Kessler said. It is in the state land office's interest to allow operators to shut in wells until they can produce at a higher price per barrel. Kessler said relief for the industry in allowing oil companies to shut in wells and cease production without facing fines or losing their light leases was ideal to protect New Mexico's economy as the state weathers the impacts of the pandemic. When the price of oil is low, the state land office receives less royalty revenue and ultimately receives less money for our beneficiaries, she said. The state land office's concern is to protect revenue that is due to our beneficiaries. We prefer to receive revenue at a higher price per barrel so we can provide more value to our beneficiaries. Since the initial rulemaking went into effect, Kessler said the state land office received 189 applications for shut-ins, with 127 royalty payments received on such wells. The land office classified 112 of those wells as marginal, meaning they produced 10 barrels of oil or less per day. The severe reduction of oil price since the end of February led to the emergency rule, Kessler said. Continued low oil prices prompted the extension of the time frame for shutting in wells. Numerous oil and gas companies voiced support for the rulemaking, including major producers Chevron, Occidental Petroleum, and Concho Resources. Chevron supports the proposed rule because it's in the best interest of the state, the land office, and your beneficiaries, and it's in the best interest of the industry that provide this revenue to the state, said Fred Berner of Chevron. We believe the rule is smart because it allows operators more flexibility in managing assets. Environmental and activist groups worried that preserving the industry through financially hard times could mean less environmental protections and oversight as wells are idled. Mario Nanasi, executive director of New Energy Economy, argued that adequate bonding should be enacted by the state when wells are drilled so that companies are held responsible for the costs of remediating the wells when they are ultimately abandoned. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency. This article is entitled "Worldwide Oil Demand is Far from Normal" by Julian Lee, Bloomberg. It was too good to be true. Last weekend's OPEC Plus meeting took a decision in record time to extend deep output cuts that had halted a dramatic slide in prices, and members even agreed to abide by them. The timing was perfect. The deal would keep oil from flooding the market, allowing time for demand to recover as economies around the world fire back up after draconian coronavirus lockdowns. Yet oil prices aren't recovering as the bulls had hoped. Yes, there is a rebalancing of supply and demand in the offing, but consumption hasn't picked up quite as much as they hoped it would by now. A rally that briefly took West Texas Intermediate crude above $40 a barrel in the first week of June has fizzled out, as the euphoria of exiting lockdown is replaced by the reality of living with this virus. Around the world, it's becoming clear that getting back to work and play will be halting. In the U.S., there are now fears a resurgence of COVID-19 infections in some places could force a reversal of reopenings. And new weekly data show record levels of inventories in U.S. stockpiles. It wasn't supposed to be this way. Output cuts were meant to start draining inventories, while reopening of stores, factories, and businesses boosted demand. Instead, things seem to be going in the opposite direction. Let's start with a broad view. The U.S. Energy Information Administration's outlook for global oil demand is becoming more pessimistic. Its latest forecast, published earlier this month, shows demand remaining almost 4.5 million barrels a day, or 4.5%, below last year's level in the first quarter, in the fourth quarter. That's twice the loss it foresaw last month. More specifically, in the U.S., the recovery oil demand from the depths of destruction seen in April is faltering. Delivery of all fuels from storage depots remains 20% below year-earlier levels on a four-week average basis. The pickup in gasoline demand, as some people returned to work but shunned public transport, has ground to a halt and remains down year-on-year by about 20%. Jet fuel is still down by more than 60%, while the drop in distillate fuel oil demand is getting bigger, not smaller. Possible renewed lockdowns, if there were to be a second wave of infections, could quickly send the recovery into reverse. Now let's take a look at transport, which combined accounts for 56% of oil usage worldwide. There is definitely no sign of a V-shaped recovery in flying, which saw the biggest collapse as borders were closed and planes were grounded. Although worldwide commercial flights monitored by Flight Radar 24 have risen by 54% from their low point in mid-April, they remain more than 60% below the levels seen in early January. While some airlines in Europe are beginning to reactivate routes, full border openings are still at least a couple of weeks away. In the UK, quarantine requirements for arriving passengers are likely to limit the take-up of available seats. Private car usage is getting a boost as people seek to maintain their distance from each other, but it's happening in a broader environment of greatly reduced mobility. Even as restrictions are eased, many companies are only welcoming a small percentage of their employees back into the office to respect social distancing measures. Many people who can work from home are continuing to do so. This translates into a very narrow upturn in driving, as shown in near real-time statistics from the TomTom Traffic Index. Even in China, where some traffic has not only returned to but exceeded pre-pandemic levels, that congestion is limited in both time and space. Roads in Chinese cities have become even more congested during peak commuting hours, as the chart above shows, but traffic volumes outside of those times and during weekends and holidays remain subdued, showing that things still aren't fully back to normal. Elsewhere in Asia, the picture is mixed. Traffic data for Japan and Taiwan show congestion never eased to the extent it did elsewhere. Roads in Taipei are almost as busy now as they were last year, while congestion in Tokyo is down by about 40%. But roads remain quiet in Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, and Manila, where vehicles are only just beginning to return to the streets. Europe's emergence from lockdown is reflected in the slow uptick in congestion levels on its city streets. Peak morning commute travel times are still around 65% lower on average than a year ago in London and Milan, but in early April, they had been down by almost 90%. A recovery is beginning, but with many people choosing or being asked by their employers to continue working from home, the upturn is likely to be slow. A lack of parking facilities in European cities will probably also hamper a surge in car use like the one seen in China. The U.S. is further behind still. In New York and San Francisco, road congestion at 8 a.m. is still down by about 80% from year-ago levels for a sixth week. For those hoping that the quick V-shaped recovery in oil demand would help spur oil prices higher, the data don't appear very encouraging so far. There's still a long way to go before we get back to anything like normal. This article is entitled OPEC Has Chance to Gain Against Shale by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. Once the global oil market emerges from the coronavirus crisis, it may be greeted by a surprising change, greater dependence on crude from OPEC. For the time being, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies are relinquishing their share of the market in a bid to prop up crude prices, slashing millions of barrels of output as the pandemic crushes fuel demand. They'd already spent the past 3 years forsaking sales volumes to offset the oil glut unleashed by burgeoning U.S. shale production. Before the pandemic, forecasters were projecting the group would need to cut production further in coming years. Yet, the current upheaval could give OPEC another chance. As the oil price collapse chokes off investment in new supplies around the world, from the mega projects of big oil to drilling by U.S. shale wildcatters, some analysts see the cartel reviving its battered standing. From the point of view of oil market share, OPEC will be a clear winner in the coming years, said Michele Della Vigna, head of energy research at Goldman Sachs Group, Inc. Underinvestment in the rest of the industry ultimately plays to their favor. It is a message that the organization should still treat with caution. Warnings abounded during the last decade that the plunge in investment which followed the 2014 oil market crash would leave a supply gap for OPEC to fill. But the shortage never materialized, as American shale proved surprisingly resilient. Instead, the 60-year-old organization, led by Saudi Arabia and other Middle East exporters, found itself in late 2016 forming an alliance with erstwhile rivals, such as Russia, to curtail production. Last week, this 23-nation network, known as OPEC Plus, reaffirmed it will keep output capped all the way through to 2022. The group's monitoring committee meets again on June 18th for another review of the market. Shifting view. It's too early to tell whether the latest predictions of the supply gap will prove unfounded, or whether this time really is different. But initial indications do suggest that OPEC could reemerge from the current round of cutbacks in a stronger position. Before this year's price rout, market watchers projected that demand for the organization's crude would dwindle as its rivals kept on growing. In an annual outlook published in November, OPEC itself predicted that such demand would sink 7% by 2023, squeezed by both the relentless flood of American shale and new offshore supplies from Guyana and Norway. The International Energy Agency forecast that the volume required from OPEC wouldn't rebound to last year's levels until 2024. Now the picture appears to be shifting. Goldman Sachs forecasts that this call on OPEC may instead climb roughly 17% between 2019 and 2025, reaching 34 million barrels a day. Rystad Energy AS, a consultant based in Oslo, and Citigroup Inc. have also turned projections for demand declines into estimates of growth. U.S. decline. Maybe it's a reprieve, said Ed Morse, head of commodities research at Citigroup. The big threat from U.S. production growth of 1 million barrels a day per year ad infinitum, or at least through 2025, is no longer present in the way it was. The price crash is upending the Trump administration's ambitions of American energy dominance. U.S. crude production has plunged by 15% in the past 2 months to a little more than 11 million barrels a day, according to government data. With spending in the shale sector slashed in half, according to IEA estimates, worse may be yet to come. For Goldman, an even bigger issue than the shale slowdown is a 60% decline over the past 5 years in annual investment in long-term projects, which particularly sustain output from OPEC's rivals, to about $37 billion. This will finally be felt next year, bringing supply growth outside OPEC to a halt, the bank says. This year's economic slump is only tightening the squeeze, reducing overall oil and gas investment by almost $250 billion, or about a third, according to the IEA. Oil producers such as BP and ExxonMobil Corporation have announced billions of cuts in capital expenditure. Shale lifeline. The risk remains that OPEC's current strategy of propping up oil prices with production cuts could throw rivals a lifeline. Brent crude has more than doubled since late April to about $40 a barrel, and there are signs that U.S. shale drillers are seizing on the opportunity. EOG Resources Inc., America's largest shale-focused producer, and Parsley Energy Inc. are ramping operations back up. Nevertheless, investment delays amid the downturn have paved the way for a supply shortage in future years, said Per Magnus Nystuen, head of analysis at Rystad. In that environment, OPEC nations like Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, with much lower production costs and massive hydrocarbon resources, may be best placed to grab market share. The deferrals in investments in the current down cycle have created the conditions for an undersupplied 2025, Nystuen said. The Middle Eastern OPEC countries will be crucial to bridge the balances.
Hello, this is April, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, June 13, 2020. Crime. City, man charged in attack on officer, from staff reports. A 32-year-old man was being held on a charge of aggravated assault on a public servant after an incident in which he attempted to gouge an officer's eye, according to a press release from the city spokeswoman. Bond for the first-degree felony has been set at $100,000 for Joshua Littlejohn. Police were dispatched to a laundromat in the 700 block of East Florida Avenue at about 1 p.m. Thursday, in reference to a man, later identified as Littlejohn, touching himself. When an officer attempted to detain Littlejohn, he began to physically attack the officer, according to the release. Littlejohn attempted to gouge the officer's eye and take the officer's service pistol, according to the release. Civilians at the scene aided the officer, enabling Littlejohn to be taken into custody. The officer was transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where he was treated for minor injuries and released. The investigation is ongoing. Obituaries. Billy Guy Bill Smith. Billy Guy Bill Smith, longtime Midland resident and oil field legend, passed from this earth to the hands of his maker on June 10, 2020, following a short illness at his residence in Blackwell, Texas. His body will be at Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton, Texas. Service will be at 3 p.m. Monday, June 15th, in the chapel at Evergreen Cemetery, Stanton, Texas. Bill was born in Dublin, Texas, May 19, 1929, to Harvey and Edna Smith. He was raised primarily in Albany, Texas, where he attended school until leaving to proudly serve in the United States Marines during World War II. Bill married the absolute love of his life, Nona Wells, October 31, 1949, in Albany, Texas. Their commitment to each other reflected a true love story and stayed strong throughout their 69 years of marriage, setting an example of God's intent for marriage to all who crossed their path. Bill worked long and hard throughout his life, beginning at 3 years of age picking cotton in the fields. He never stopped working and always did so with honesty and integrity. He was a happy man with a deep love for God and could often be found at his office around 3:30 a.m. reading his Bible before getting his day started with his hands, as he called his employees, around 5 a.m. He called his employees hands as he believed they were all one body working for the same end, and it took each of them doing their part, working in unison, to have a good outcome. Bill held many jobs throughout his life, including roughnecking, Borden milk home delivery, fireman, landscaping, and pump jack inspector repair person. He had an entrepreneurial spirit. On a prayer and with a great deal of determination, he started Bill Smith's pumping unit service in the early 70s and grew with it until selling in 1994. The business grew rapidly due to his good name for honesty and quality work. He continued as an oil field consultant until January 2020. Bill got his pilot license at the age of 16. He loved flying. He named one of the airplanes he purchased Little Mama, a name he used to refer to Nona when he wasn't calling her Little Doll. He loved to fish and hunt. He was a sharpshooter and made sure his family, including kids, grandkids, and anyone else who might seem hungry, had meat on the table. Among other organizations, he was a member of the CAF and Sheriff's Posse. Bill was deeply loved and respected by his daughters, every extension of his family, friends, and acquaintances. It would be impossible to list even a whisper of the cherished memories of him each generation holds. He was known as a man who stood by his family and friends through thick and thin, never judging for decisions they made, whether right or wrong, always willing to lend a helping hand, a giant hug, and or a listening ear. He never met a stranger and never failed to help anyone in need, always without being asked. Best put by his family, he has always been a constant in their life, an amazing man, showing our entire family what a good, honest, hard-working person truly is. The absolute best daddy, grandfather, great-grandfather anyone could ever ask for. Teaching us and setting the standards of what a man should be. He was a giant among men, a hero for his family, but most of all, he was a hero for Jesus. He was a member of Kelview Baptist Church and attended faithfully until illness would no longer allow. Survivors include his four daughters, Sandy Jenkins and husband Rocky of Fredericksburg, Texas, Vicki Welch Lips and husband Ray of Blackwell, Texas, Nona Gail McCall of Midland, Jeannie Bailey and husband Bob of Midland, 9 grandchildren, Shane Jenkins and Michelle, Brent Jenkins and wife Esther, Bill Welch and wife Kitty, Roger Welch Jr. and wife Rachel, Brandon Lips and wife Hannah, Shelley Jackson and husband Ty, Tricia Reed and husband Alan, Amber Harris and husband Cody, Amanda Fioretti and husband Tommy, Lucas Bailey and wife Katie, and Rainey Hilliard and husband Derek, Zach Woody, Brittany Woody, and 29 great-grandchildren, a sister Bobby Draper and husband AJ, and sister Joyce Yates Turner and husband Don, and a multitude of other family and friends. He was preceded in life by his parents Harvey Smith and Edna Richardson Smith Webb, wife Nona Wells Smith, and brother Roland Smith. The family suggests memorials to Evergreen Cemetery Association, P.O. Box 224, Stanton, Texas, 79782. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbert Funeral Home in Stanton, Texas. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Education official says schools will reopen in the fall. Texas schools will be safe for students to return to in the fall, the state's education commissioner predicted Thursday, despite the recent spike in coronavirus cases and hospitalizations in the state. Parents who aren't comfortable sending their kids back to school will be allowed to keep them home under Education Commissioner Mike Morath's Return to Campus plan, which will be updated next week with more guidance for school districts on how it will work. The state will not require students and teachers to wear masks, but districts will be able to make their own rules on face coverings, an agency spokeswoman said. It will be safe for Texas public school students, teachers, and staff to return to school campuses for in-person instruction this fall, but there will also be flexibility for families with health concerns so that their children can be educated remotely if the parent so chooses. Republican Governor Greg Abbott ordered schools closed March 19th, sending more than 5 million students into distance learning programs to finish the spring semester and canceling standardized testing. Abbott allowed districts to hold in-person summer school courses with strict social distancing guidelines, but only a few have chosen to do so.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, May 30, 2020. Dear Abby, stepmom goes a step too far claiming children as her own. Dear Abby, my former husband had an affair years ago, and when our divorce was final, he married the woman he was involved with. I'll call her Libby. Although I have moved on, it bothers me when she refers to my children as her children. I have asked her to stop, but she continues to talk about her daughter and her son and insists it's a term of endearment and it shouldn't bother me. My children don't like Libby. So if she's trying to get the world to believe they're one big happy family, it isn't working. I think it's rude of her to insist on telling people that these are her children. It's as if Libby not only took my husband, but she's also claiming to be the mother of my children. How should I handle this wretched person who refuses to get it? Real Mom in Kentucky. Dear Mom, Libby gets it, and she may persist in doing it in order to get your goat. But this is not a battle you should pick. It's possible stepmom may simply be trying to acknowledge her role in the parenting equation. Dear Abby, is it appropriate to confront someone in a restroom about not washing their hands, whether at work or in public? I noticed at work that some of my coworkers walk right past the sink or rinse their hands with water for a second and then leave. I think washing your hands thoroughly with soap is more important now than ever, and not washing hands is a health hazard. Watching the washing in Texas. Dear Watching, you are right. It is a health hazard. Everyone should realize that fact in light of the current health crisis. According to the Mayo Clinic, unwashed hands are spreaders of disease, which is why medical personnel and workers in the food industry are urged to be diligent about it. That said, I don't think it would be prudent for you to assume the parental role and remind your coworkers to wash their hands after using the bathroom. You might, however, suggest to your boss, once people are no longer working remotely, that it would be wise to issue a memo about the importance of frequent hand washing. Dear Abby, my sister Camille and I have almost nothing in common. She lives far from where I do. We have seen each other infrequently over the years, but when we have, she has always dropped a nasty comment or two, ridiculing me or my husband or our lifestyle. She recently took early retirement and wants to come for a visit. Another sister says Camille is much more relaxed now because working full-time was very stressful for her. I gave up on a relationship with her long ago, and I have no desire to see or entertain her. We didn't even like each other's children. Yet, I'm feeling guilty about saying no to her visit. Is it okay to draw the line on contact with a family member? Leave me alone in Washington. Dear Leave, yes it is. And it is also okay to tell her exactly why. Hello, this is April, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, June 13, 2020. Dear Abby, granddaughter wants wedding with no family in attendance. Dear Abby, our first granddaughter is getting married in 6 months and has told her parents that no one from either family is invited to the wedding. They want to get married by themselves because they are both shy and don't want to be the center of attention. At first, I was okay with it, but the more I thought about it, the more hurt I felt. The confusing part about this is she wants a pre-wedding party for both families to attend. So I asked her to keep an open mind and think about having the party right after the marriage ceremony. Now she won't talk to me. Was I wrong to suggest an idea? My husband is now saying he doesn't want to attend any party they will have. I can't stop thinking about our daughter and how she feels about not being able to see her daughter get married. I'm afraid I may have made things worse, and I'm very depressed. I just want to fix it so everyone is happy. Help! Depressed in North Carolina. Dear Depressed, so you have appointed yourself the official family fixer? Your shy granddaughter and her fiancé appear to be confirmed introverts. If they prefer to take their vows privately, it's their privilege and you shouldn't personalize it. That was your mistake. While I don't think you have committed a cardinal sin and do think your granddaughter overreacted, you shouldn't feel the need to mend any fences. As to how your daughter will feel about not seeing her daughter get married, that is not your problem. Take a step back and let the bride and groom celebrate their day as they wish. P.S. I find it odd the bride and groom would want any party, feeling the way they do about the ceremony. Dear Abby, why do people feel compelled to ask if my dog was adopted or rescued? I have wanted a dog for at least 5 years. Because I was in nursing school, I waited until I graduated, and then my partner and I researched extensively. While I love the idea of adopting, sheltering, or rescuing, we wanted a purebred German Shepherd puppy. My son and I both have mental health issues, and our dog has been a huge help and an antidepressant all in one. It is unfair that people ask these questions or have the audacity to make faces and comments when I say no. I have neither the desire nor the capacity to mend or train a potentially broken dog. How I got her is no one's business but ours and our vet's. The best response I have heard when someone asks if a dog is adopted or rescued is, "No, she's biological." I've used it only once, but it got my point across. Please remind your readers that asking these questions is rude. MYOB in Massachusetts. Dear MYOB, I'm willing to remind them, but whether they'll pay attention is anyone's guess. What these people are doing is expressing the idea that animals who are in need of a good home should take priority. That said, there is nothing wrong with having a purebred animal if that is your preference. P.S. I hear a lot lately about people adopting dogs during this quarantine period because they are desperate for company. I sincerely hope the animals will not be forgotten or discarded once the quarantine is lifted and folks return to their somewhat normal lives.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Help to relieve cramps. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 90-year-old woman and recently I am having nighttime leg cramps in both legs. What kind of potassium pills should I take to help relieve the cramps? My gluten-free diet has helped and I have no heart issues. SFH. Answer. Although abnormalities of blood, magnesium, sodium, phosphate, and potassium all may be associated with leg cramping, none of these is the most likely cause, and I would recommend against supplementing before you get an evaluation of your blood levels. At age 90, potassium levels, even in healthy people, are sometimes right at the top of the normal range or even slightly elevated. Excess potassium levels that come from taking additional potassium as a supplement can be very dangerous. The most effective preventive strategies for nighttime leg cramps are regular moderate exercise and calf stretching before bed. Proper footwear, keeping sheets loose. One reader wrote that he used a cardboard box to keep the weight off his toes, and getting enough water will also help. Medication is seldom necessary. I do not recommend quinine, even in tonic water, as it is not effective and can, in the rare case, be toxic. Verapamil, normally used for high blood pressure, can be considered for severe recurrent leg cramps that have not responded to conservative treatments.
Stepson's presence creates tension in home. Dear Abby, for Friday, June 19th, 2020. Dear Abby, my wife and I have been married 5 months. Her 40-year-old son lives in our basement. He has a job, but I have no idea if he pays rent. If he doesn't, it really doesn't bother me. What does bother me is that, at his age, he should be out on his own by now. He's trying to pay off school loans, which I understand. However, he is the one who incurred these bills. All he had to do was finish his dissertation, and he would have had his doctorate. Instead, he quit school and doesn't plan on going back. My wife doesn't think she's an enabler, but I disagree. It's getting very hard for me to put up with this situation. Upset in Colorado. Dear Upset, much depends upon the reason your wife's son quits school instead of getting that doctorate. I wish you had mentioned whether he has been living in his mother's house since childhood or if this is something relatively recent. He may have emotional or mental health issues that need addressing. Because this is creating friction in your marriage, it may be something you and your wife should talk through with the help of a licensed marriage and family therapist. Dear Abby, I am 30 years old and single. I met this guy while I was working downtown 3 or 4 months ago. He is almost twice my age. At first, I didn't think of him as more than just a customer, but he's very attractive for his age. One day last month, he told me he had lost his phone during my shift, so I asked him to give me his number so I could call him in case somebody found his phone, which I did. Later that night, he called me asking, "Who is this?" So I told him who I was. We have been talking ever since, and I have been spending every weekend at his house. I'm starting to think I can see a future with this guy because I feel butterflies in my stomach. I like how things are between us. I care about him and maybe want more one day. What should I do? Liking an older man. Dear Liking, what you should do is continue exploring a relationship and find out if he feels the same way you do. But the two of you should take things slowly and discuss the age difference before making any commitments. Although his age isn't necessarily a deal breaker, it is significant. Dear Abby, am I hoping for too much with my husband of 40 plus years? In the evening, we or I watch TV, and he's very agreeable to watch anything, mostly because he hardly watches at all. He's playing games on his iPad and glancing at the TV. He'll ask questions occasionally about the characters or the plot lines, but it's obvious he's not following. For some reason, I find it disappointing that he's not really watching, even if it's something he's shown an interest in or selected. Should I just feel grateful he's in the same room with me and alive? Feeling solo in California. Dear Feeling Solo, focusing on gratitude that you are together, doing things you both enjoy is healthy. If you don't care for the program he isn't watching, feel free to change the channel to something you prefer. However, the two of you should make a point of doing something together in which you are both fully engaged, because if you do, it will bring you even closer to each other.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun and moon in Gemini. Happy birthday for Friday, June 19, 2020. Stimulating and challenge-oriented, you push on through the obstacles of this pandemic year. You elicit strong responses from others and must negotiate, even compromise, for a beloved project. You succeed brilliantly, as you almost always do. If single, you find your mate after mid-year. If attached, your partner is likely to be hot-headed and passionate exchanges intensify, followed by blissful makeup sessions. Scorpio gives you a good run for your money. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. You will be extremely busy. Also, some romantic opportunities come today, which you should take advantage of. You will not have to go far to attract someone new. It could happen right in your own backyard. Tonight, return calls and emails first. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 3 stars. Disagreements over money matters might arise, but such conflicts should be easily solved. A pay raise is possible. There is a tendency to overspend or otherwise overdo it. Passions run high, although energies are somewhat discordant. Tonight, spend valuable time with a child. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 2 stars. You will not be shy about opening your mouth today, but avoid power struggles with others. You will get more accomplished behind the scenes, but this aspect can also lead to stress-induced stomach complaints. Rest easy. Tonight, completely indulge yourself. Cancer, June 21 through July 22, 3 stars. You appreciate some time spent alone in contemplation today, or perhaps just extra sleep or indulgence in hobbies that prove therapeutic for the soul. Resist a tendency to get overly sentimental about the past. You might experience some self-pity. Tonight, early bedtime. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Powerful friends or groups have an extremely strong influence on you and may change your life considerably. Some who have been looking for a financial backer of sorts could find one today. Tonight, your inner life takes on more significance. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. You certainly will not have time to be bored today. Your only problem will be in biting off more than you can chew, as multiple ideas and plans come to fruition all at once. Your nerves might be frazzled. Tonight, curb those criticisms. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 1 star. You experience a pull between the needs of your boss and domestic crisis, but this will soon pass. For those expecting a vacation in July, you might have to cope with news of several minor but perhaps costly annoyances, including possible travel delays. Tonight, relax. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 1 star. Be cautious about a new relationship forming now as deception reigns, followed by a possible abrupt parting of the ways. You might be tempted to overspend, too. Agitated friends need you as a sounding board. Tonight, get a good night's sleep. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. Today brings romantic opportunities, but be sure to think before you act if you are not entirely free to pursue them. Your usual sense of control and discipline might not be operating efficiently these days. Tonight, avoid making commitments, as change is in the wind. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 5 stars. Something merely rumored could become a solid career opportunity. Today gives you the green light to follow up on those ideas and discussions that have been put on the back burner in the past months. Tonight, you receive the answer you wish for. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 5 stars. Creative and inspirational ideas will flow today. Be sure to take advantage of local social opportunities. New romance might come your way. However, give any relationship a little time to prove itself before falling madly in love. Tonight, watch your spending. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Today favors the help or cooperation of an older family member, perhaps a parent. Do not run yourself ragged, or your psychological health could suffer. Find a quiet space for meditation or other calming pursuits, such as sleeping. Tonight, quiet music and candlelight work wonders. Born today, baseball player Lou Gehrig, 1903, writer Salman Rushdie, 1947, actress Kathleen Turner, 1954.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.